your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine, you have stood by me in my
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you and all the people around the world, all the people in colleges and people who are looking to make positive change. This is the Empowerment Hour. Lots to share today. We always start with health and nutrition. Going to talk about the Roman gladiators. What did they eat? It'll surprise you. Then it's fennel season. What are the health benefits of fennel? I'll share that with you. And then we also want to talk about new research on walnuts and what disease they really make a difference in. I'll bet you won't guess it. You'll probably say the heart. Not so. Also, experts urge parents to make every day a vitamin D day. And there's a reason why, especially with winter upon us. And people with stress-related inflammation likelier to suffer from depression. What can we do about it? Also, want to talk about how to live a longer life. And we're going to share that with you as well. And lots more on health and healing. Then, I want to let you know I'm doing a special in-depth investigative report on did we, and it's a question that I will pose and then see what evidence exists, weaponize the Ebola virus. Is that even a possibility? Well, it is a possibility. And I'll bring on the experts, including experts in bioterrorism, who are scientists, who will put forth their information. I wrote an article that was a feature cover story, meaning it was the feature of a major national magazine with millions of readers, in October of 1989 on the secret experiments that our government had been doing on Americans, mainly people in the prison system, the military, African Americans, and in poor neighborhoods. And I used a lot of examples, and one of the examples I uncovered was a Dr. Sloan Kettering who was going around and injecting live cancer cells into pregnant women in their legs. No follow-up, and they lied and said that it was vitamins. Nothing ever happened to that person, but he did go to work at the Winstar Institute down in Philadelphia that was doing genetic engineering research. They have done not a couple, according to their own documents, the government's own documents, thousands upon thousands of experiments without people's knowledge or consent. Everything from putting uranium on toast and feeding it to kids in hospitals. You have no comprehension whatsoever of how bad it gets. But that does not mean that the fact that they have historically done this without regard for anyone's health, that they did it with Ebola, but I'll be looking at it, and I'll be presenting that information very shortly to you. And also, I'll talk today about 64 countries that require GMO labeling. Why not the U.S.? I'll give you the latest on that. Then we're going to have a newsmaker guest today, Alex Baden-Mayer from Washington, on new pending legislation on GMO labeling and Monsanto and Big Ag's effort to derail it. Now, a lot of people listening right now and watching in Colorado and in Oregon, you're the two states that are the bellwether states people are watching. And they're throwing millions, tens of millions of dollars through Big Ag in there to confuse the people and create fear. And as a result, every time their ads play, the public support for labeling of GMO foods diminishes. We're going to be submitting an article probably tonight showing you how bad GMOs are and that they have no science, I repeat, no science, to support that it's a benefit on any level, especially when it comes to health or eliminating hunger, they lose on every single count. But it's easy to influence people. And so we're in our final 2 weeks before that vote, so we're pulling at all the stops. Here's one thing we can do. For all the people listening right now, please watch again Seeds of Death. You can go to Gary and All YouTube. The latest I just saw this morning was 1,243,000 people had watched the full film just recently, and watch it and send it out to people. The more people we send it to watch, the more likely it is those people become educated and the more likely they are to have a better perspective on voting in Oregon and Colorado on this. And I want to thank PBS Channel 12 in Denver for airing Seeds of Death repeatedly to counter the pro-big ag, pro-big GMO propaganda. So we have a lot to share. Plus today, the rich don't create jobs. Let's deal with that, and we will. Also from Dr. Michael Shearer, Israel owns Congress, but no one talks about it in the media. And also from a follow-up from yesterday's program on dealing with breast cancer in a natural way, there was a special on 60 Minutes, one of their segments, had mainstream orthodox oncologist, cancer specialist, complaining about the high cost of chemotherapy. That's good. I certainly support that. What was not said was that chemotherapy doesn't work in the vast majority of cases, actually causes cancer. That's bad. So even if you got the cost of chemotherapy down 50%, so it costs people $75,000 a year or $100,000 a year instead of $150,000 or $200,000 a year, you're still killing them and you're not curing them. So it's still bad. So today you will hear from a doctor talking about chemotherapy doesn't kill cancer cells in 97% of the cases, but it does kill people. So we're going to hear from this doctor, Dr. Glyden, a little later on. So you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Roman gladiators. Well, what did they eat? From the Medical University of Vienna, quote, Roman gladiators ate a mostly vegetarian diet and drank tonics. These are the findings of anthropological investigations carried out on bones of warriors found during excavations in the ancient cities. Historic sources report that the gladiators had their own diet. This comprised beans and grains. Now, by the way, they would have been probably barley, because they were famous for being called barley eaters. In a study by the Department of Forensic Medicine at the Medical University of Vienna, in cooperation with the Department of Anthropology at the Institute of Forensic Medicine, University of Bern, the bones were examined from a gladiator cemetery, uncovered, which dates back to the 2nd and 3rd century B.C. and in a Roman city, Ephesus, which is in modern-day Turkey. And at the time, this city was the capital of the Roman province and Asia and had over 200,000 inhabitants. Using special isotope ratios, meaning carbon, nitrogen, sulfur, they investigated in the collagen of the bone, and they could tell what a person ate and what they drank. And so they had all the plant fibers in there and the plant polyphenols and chemicals in there. So here it is. Those big, tough, muscular gladiators were vegetarian. Mental rest and reflection boost learning. University of Texas, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Quote, when people relax their minds in a state of reflection, the brain engages mechanisms that boost learning. Previously, scientists had found that resting the mind or daydreaming contributes to strengthening memories of events and the storage of information. However, the new study suggests that this kind of mental rest not only helps consolidate memories, but also improves future learning. Wow. Quote, "We've shown for the first time that how the brain processes information during rest can improve future learning." So what does this mean in just lay language? It means that we get so preoccupied during a day, looking at our to-do list, trying to squeeze everything in, being highly stressed because we're trying to make artificial deadlines, that we don't take the time just to be comfortable in the moment and relax. One of the images that I have growing up in my hometown was the summertime. I remember in the summertime, you always knew it was summer or spring because when you'd walk down the street, you could hear the hand mowers. No one had electric mowers, and everyone prided themselves in having their blades sharpened and the grass just cut. You could smell the sweet chlorophyll in the air. I love that smell. That's one of the reasons I love cutting my grass, and I have 31 acres of grass to cut, and it grows and grows because I fertilize it. And by the way, for those of you who really want to do something good for your grass, if you can get seaweed, not edible seaweed, I'm talking about seaweed that comes up on the beach at night, and when the tide goes back out in the morning, you have this long, lines of seaweed. And then you go and collect it, and then you put it in a compost heap, and it biodegrades down. And then you use that, and it's got rich nitrogen fixed in it, and that fertilizes grass, plants. It's terrific. I even do a reduction of it, an infusion, and then I spray it with a hand pump sprayer on the top of trees. And I also spray it on roses. So I have this, in fact, I'll take pictures when I go home in a couple of months, and you'll see colors that are so rich and plants that are so healthy. That's because of this particular way that I've created this seaweed emulsion. So if anyone in the audience, there's a business for you, great home-based business, costs you nothing. Just take a pickup truck or your car and load it up with seaweed and then let it biodegrade down, which depending upon where you're at, and if you put a cover over it, it'll take maybe 2 or 3 months and you end up with this wonderful compost. In any case, and by the way, another thing I see that people are doing wrong with their fruit trees, don't ever let your fruit tree just grow because you've got to top it. Ideally, top it at 8 foot because the whole idea of a fruit is that it's gaining energy from the soil and photosynthesis. So if you cut the top of your tree at 8 foot, right after the fruit has been harvested, and then fertilize it, then the energy goes into growing the tree out, not up. So you'll get much more fruit. It'll be much more dense in nutrients. And if you don't do that, then you end up with one of those papaya trees that are so tall you can't get them. It's good for the birds. And or peaches you can't get. In fact, 90% of the fruit that a person should eat, they can't reach. Because it's too high, even too high for ladders. So always keep all fruit trees, no higher than maximum 10 foot. Ideally, 8 foot so you can walk around it and harvest your fruit. Now, fennel. What are the health benefits? Now, a lot of people don't realize one of the best ways of having fennel is to have it fresh, and you can grow it in a greenhouse. By the way, just so you know, I'm going to be filming each stage of how to build your own backyard hydroponic house. And also aquaponics. I'm going to combine hydroponic, aquaponic, and I've come up with a new design that I can get 10 times or 1,000% more food growing in a house I've invented. It's, and I'm sharing it with everyone, so it's out there for anyone to use. and where you can grow watercress. You can grow that which requires water, but also it's all organic. You don't have to worry about temperature, soil, sun, snow, nothing. And one of the things you can grow is fennel. But most people make the mistake of cooking their fennel. Not good, in my opinion. It's very watery. Instead, shave fennel. Get that little contraption where you shave cabbage to make coleslaw, you know, a little shaver, and you shave fennel, and then you shave sweet onion, and you put the two together into a salad. Makes a great taste. Anyhow, here's the reasons why I believe that we should be having fennel on a regular basis. First, you can use all of it. You can use the stalk, the green stalk. You can use the little, the bulb, even though it's going to be a little different. The leaves, the seeds, it's all edible. And it does a lot. You have a good combination of minerals in here. It's got vitamin K in good amounts, calcium, magnesium, iron, manganese, and zinc. It helps remineralize the matrix in the bone, especially for manganese and iron and zinc. That plays a role in the production and maturation of collagen. So if you get those together, you got healthier skin, because collagen is what holds your skin up, and it's good for proteins. It lowers blood pressure. It helps you have a healthier heart because it's got fiber, potassium, folate, and vitamin C and B6. All good for lowering cholesterol. All good for your heart. And it's got a lot of it, by the way. It's good for cancer because it has high selenium. And selenium is terrific, about 200 micrograms a day. And that can help prevent cancer. And it also plays a role in liver enzyme function, helps detoxify. So that's good. And fennel also contains folate, which plays a role in DNA synthesis and repair, thus preventing the formation of cancer cells. It helps with immunity and stimulates natural killer cells. It turns off inflammation. It's a known anti-inflammatory because it has choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E, and that helps better sleep, muscle movement, learning, and memory. It helps you with metabolism, and especially if you're a premenopausal or menopausal woman, your metabolism generally is going to take a hit. You're going to gain weight. This will help prevent that, especially if you take vitamin B6 with it. It improves digestion, especially chewing on maybe a little half a teaspoon of fennel seeds after a meal. Really helps take away gas and bloating, and it increases iron absorption. And especially good for estrogen, which is found naturally in fennel. And it's crucial in regulating the female reproduction cycle. And the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center conducted a study that showed that estrogen also plays a role in controlling factors that contribute to body weight and appetite. But this is the good estrogen, the number two. And because it's an excellent source of nutrients involved in collagen, the skin support system, you want to make sure you have it. And finally, walnuts. Now, we know that walnuts are good. A handful of walnuts each day, terrific for you. This is from the New York State Institute for Basic Research in Developmental Disabilities. And this is published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. And it says, quote, that walnuts can fight against Alzheimer's disease. And then when you look at the walnuts, and they weren't a large amount of walnuts, just a normal amount that you would eat. It reduced oxidative stress and inflammation, both of which are prominent features in Alzheimer's. Quote, these findings are very promising and help lay the groundwork for future human studies on walnuts and Alzheimer's disease. Well, that's good. But walnuts are also good for your heart. They're a rich source of alpha-linolenic acid and the omega-3 fatty acids, both of which are good for your heart. So, excellent. And all over Europe, they have this, every day is a vitamin D day. Quote, survey commissioned by vitamin D shows parents are in the dark about the lack of sunshine during the winter and the importance of vitamin D to their children's diet. Hospital data show a 231% national increase in rates of vitamin D deficiency amongst toddlers and children in 5 years. So the takeaway message is, in Europe, in the United States, make sure that you get your vitamin D every day, especially in the wintertime. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a little break and come back, and then to challenge the vaccine industrial complex and the for-profit oncologist and the fact that this year we will have more than 500,000 Americans die of cancer. Never once will they challenge the protocols or anything they're given. They'll only use surgery, radiation, chemotherapy. They will not try any other therapy. You would think after 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years of war on cancer, which we've lost at least 15 million Americans, 15 million, all of those 15 million used only orthodox therapy. So whatever they were told to do, they did. They were obedient. And death was the outcome of that obedience. It's not just cancer that kills you. It's your belief system. This is a Dr. Glidden who's going to challenge that in a moment. Please stay with us. We'll be going to the Dr. Glidden. They're just getting the clip up, and we'll go to it in a moment. Let me just mention that the film is done. You have no idea how that feels after all the years and all the hours, the thousands of hours and the days on the road filming, the long days, 8 hours of driving, 4 or 5 hours of filming, but it's finished. Poverty Inc., having its worldwide premiere in New York and Los Angeles. And we're doing it as a fundraiser also for one of our sister stations, WBAI, to help it in its hour of need. And I will be there each night. There are 35 showings during 7 days, December 5th through the 11th. And I will be at the evening showings, the two evening showings, 7 and 9. But you have a chance now to call in, reserve your seat, and you get 2 copies of the film to take home with you, watching the film, a discussion with myself and panelists who are in the film afterwards, and a book, a $25 book, for just a $30 contribution. And again, this is a fundraiser for one of our stations. Now, I've had other stations, because we're all over the United States and in 166 countries, 68 countries now. If you would like to have a fundraiser using Poverty Inc., just let my office know, and we will try to help as many stations as possible use this film as a fundraiser, because it's a universal theme, poverty. You name the people, they're in the film. Everyone who is important in speaking out against inequality, injustice, the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, the destruction of our Constitution, the people who were bailed out, the people who were the criminal class who got away with it, It's all in there. It's the longest documentary I've ever done. I feel it's going to be the most important. It clocks in an hour and 51 minutes. So give a call at this number if you'd like to be a part of the premiere. And you have just 6 weeks till the premiere. Absolutely all of it will be filled. It always has been with all the ones we've ever premiered. And this is going to be an important one. It'll impact you. And there's positive solutions in it as well. The number to call is 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. If that line's busy, which it may be, call 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422. Also still looking for personal assistant. got to be able to do research, got to be able to do editing, you got to be able to be good with people, got to be able to handle multiple projects simultaneously. So I'm going to keep looking. I know that good person's out there somewhere, and you'll call that 646-926-5422 number. I'll be interviewing again on Saturday. Now let's hear, we're all ready to go with Dr. Glidden on his comments about the wrong cancer and chemotherapy.
Doctor, can we talk about cancer a little bit? Various types out there. What are some of the things that you've seen in terms of your patients, and what some of the things that you've been able to do?
A better thing to talk about in relationship to cancer, well, I will talk about that, right? A better thing to talk about, however, is the relationship between profits and cancer in the United States. There was a study that was published, I believe it was in 1994. It was a 12-year program, 12-year study. They looked at adults who had developed cancer as an adult, not childhood cancer, but adult cancer, right? And this is the main types of cancer that we get here in the United States. They did a meta-analysis of these people all around the world who developed cancer as adults for 12 years and were treated with chemo. And they looked at the results. And they published the results in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. And the results? 97% of the time, chemotherapy does not work. 97% of the time, it doesn't work. So why is it still used? It's one reason and one reason only. Money. If you go to a medical doctor, an MD, with a sinus infection, and that doctor prescribes an antibiotic, he gets no financial kickback. Now, if he prescribes 5,000, you know, of that antibiotic in 1 month, the drug company that makes it might send him to Cancun for a conference, right? Mm-hmm. But he gets no direct remuneration. It's not with chemotherapeutic drugs, it's different. Chemotherapeutic drugs are the only classification of drugs that the prescribing doctor gets a direct cut of. So if your doctor prescribes chemotherapy for you, here's how it goes, more or less. The doctor buys it from the pharmaceutical company for $5,000, sells it to the patient for $12,000, insurance pays $9,000, and the doctor pockets the $4,000 difference. And there ought to be a law. The only reason chemotherapy is used is because doctors make money from it. Period. It doesn't work 97% of the time. If Ford Motor Company made an automobile that exploded 97% of the time, would they still be in business? No. This is the tip of the iceberg of the control that the pharmaceutical industry has on us. Most people have no idea of this at all. Now, I wrote a book. It's called The MD Emperor Has No Clothes, right? In my book, I have a bulleted list of 10 questions that every cancer patient should ask their doctor. 10 questions. I've had patients kicked out, literally, kicked out of the oncologist's office because the doctor was PO'd that the patient was asking them these questions. And these are just common sense questions. Cancer treatment in the United States, we have lost the war on cancer. We have lost the war on cancer. Why? Because cancer is not a reductionistic phenomenon. Cancer is a holistic phenomenon. And when you try to bring a reductionistic methodology like drugs and surgery to bear on a holistic phenomenon, you will completely miss the boat each and every time. You cannot do it. Medical doctors are like colorblind art critics. They can see that that's a boat. They can see the black and white outline, but they're completely blind to all of the colors and textures that make up the substance of the thing. It's no difference with cancer. The reason that people get cancer in the United States and the reason that we have completely lousy outcomes is because medical doctors are driving the research bus. When women get together and do a 5K run for breast cancer, all of that money, do you think any of that money goes to nutritional research? Do you think any of that money goes to homeopathic research or acupuncture or traditional Chinese medicine or naturopathic research? No. All of it goes to drugs and surgery, which do not work. Now, why aren't those women running for selenium? If every girl in this country took 200 micrograms of selenium, in one generation, we'd eliminate breast cancer by 82%. That's a big number. Why aren't we doing that? Because medicine in the United States is a for-profit industry, and most people are completely unaware of this, and most people bow down to the altar of MD-directed high-tech medicine at their own demise.
Dr. Glidden, one of the people, a physician who has the consciousness to stand up and tell the truth. I might mention that when you look at the actual science and you collect all the major scientific articles on chemotherapy and radiation and cancer, two things become apparent. Both therapies cause cancer. And does it make any sense to use a cancer-causing agent in trying to either prevent cancer or in treating cancer? Even though with radiation you can certainly shrink tumors, but then you never do the follow-up to show what happens 5 and 10 years later when the cancer comes back, but now the person's immune system is destroyed, and then they die quicker. But also, we see that it doesn't work. 3,000 studies, the best studies in cancer, were reviewed, and it showed that it didn't work. So I'm going to be doing more on this on an upcoming program, and I'm going to have a whole panel of oncologists on who will tell the truth, and we'll have a complete review and post that review on my website of all the major studies they use. And here's one of the things I ask people to do. When your oncologist says that you must use this particular chemotherapy, that's fine. Just say, "Doctor, I'm happy to use this chemotherapy, but could you first give me the actual scientific studies, good quality peer review studies, based upon quality research that shows that there is a high statistical probability of me being able to survive, and then could you give me one or two or three of your patients that have had the similar cancer using the similar protocol who's alive and well today?" That's the standard that I use. When people ask, why is it I didn't put X, Y, and Z doctor into my documentary on cancer years ago, it's because when I went to the different clinics around the world, Dr. Issels in Germany and Dr. Al-Kaidi in Panama, Florida, and Virginia Livingston Whelan, California, I ask them, "Can you put me in touch with at least 20 of your patients who were terminal, have independent proof they're being terminal, and the only therapy they had was yours, and 5 years later they're alive and well with no cancer?" Dr. Evisi in New York had over 500 patients that met that qualification. I interviewed every one. Dr. Burton in Freeport, Grand Bahamas did the same. Dr. Issels had the most. He had about 4,000 patients who were alive and well around the world who had been diagnosed with terminal cancer, only received his therapy, and were alive and well. And Dr. Livingston Weider, she had about 220. Dr. Brzezinski had some, not the most. But all the others said they could cure cancer but couldn't prove it. Hence, they didn't make it in. Why don't you see how many patients there'd be if that was a criteria before using a therapy from an orthodox doctor? In a moment, we're going to hear a comment from Nick Henauer, a very wealthy man, arguing the issue that we've been told repeatedly. Haven't we heard it? You've got to let the marketplace dictate. Do you? Well, is that going to mean that we're going to have more jobs? Absolutely. Because the wealthy in America, if you give them a tax break, they're going to create jobs. Really? That's wonderful. Except it's not true. We'll hear from him. I was just asked, who are some of the people in this documentary? Well, first, I film more people around the world than ever any documentary I've ever done. I'll give you a few. Sasha Abramsky, the scholar on American Way of Poverty. Benjamin Barber, Dr. Barber, a senior research scholar at City University. Jordan Belfort, you know, he was the actual Wolf of Wall Street. Wow, did he open up? And I got the last filmed interview with him before the Martin Scorsese DiCaprio film on his life that then prevented him with a gag order from talking. But I got it all on film, and you wouldn't believe what he said is the entire culture down there. And then I went out to the tent cities. I went under the bridges. I went into New Orleans shelters. I went to San Francisco. Everywhere in America I could find those people who were suffering, I found them. Dr. Brown, John Kavanaugh, Gerald Salante, Professor Emeritus at Harvard School Divinity School, Dr. Harvey Cox, Father Michael Doyle, one of the Camden activists, Glenn Ford, the Black Agenda Report, Dr. Jim Garrison, Dennis Halliday, former UN Assistant Secretary, Chris Hedges, Professor Michael Hodson, Max Kaiser, Dr. David Corton, Dennis Kucinich, Ralph Nader, Francis Moore LePage, Dr. Gary Leach, Les Leopold, Greg Pallast, Michael Parente, John Perkins, Confessions of Economic Hitman, and Dr. Francis Fox Piven, Robert Reich, Michael Rupert, Danny Schachter, Robert Scheer, and dozens more. This is the ultimate film, the most comprehensive film ever produced, filmed on poverty. What really causes it? Who's behind it? Why it's continuing? Why no home foreclosure moratorium? Why no credit card interest forgiveness? It's all in there. So you'll be able to select the date of the screening you want to come to by calling 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or if it's busy, 646-926-5422. And I will be there for both screenings in the evening with discussions. And again, this is a fundraiser for our sister station, BAI New York, and I will make this available as a fundraiser for other non-commercial radio stations in the United States. Now, let's hear from Nick Henauer on Rich People Don't Create Jobs.
It is astounding how significantly one idea can shape a society and its policies. Consider this one. If taxes on the rich go up, job creation will go down. This idea is an article of faith for Republicans and seldom challenged by Democrats, and has indeed shaped much of the economic landscape. But sometimes the ideas that we are certain are true are dead wrong. Consider that for thousands of years, humans believed that the Earth was the center of the universe. It's not, and an astronomer who still believed that it was would do some pretty terrible astronomy. Likewise, a policymaker who believes that the rich are job creators and therefore should not be taxed will do equally terrible policy. I have started or helped start dozens of companies and initially hired lots of people. But if there was no one around who could afford to buy what we had to sell, all those companies and all those jobs would have evaporated. That's why I can say with confidence that rich people don't create jobs, nor do businesses large or small. Jobs are a consequence of a circle of life-like feedback loop between customers and businesses. And only consumers can set in motion this virtuous cycle of increasing demand and hiring. In this sense, an ordinary consumer is more of a job creator than a capitalist like me. That's why when business people take credit for creating jobs, it's a little bit like squirrels taking credit for creating evolution. It's actually the other way around. Anyone who's ever run a business knows that hiring more people is a course of last resort for capitalists. It's what we do if and only if rising consumer demand requires it. And in this sense, calling ourselves job creators isn't just inaccurate, it's disingenuous. That's why our existing policies are so upside down. When the biggest tax exemptions and the lowest tax rates benefit the richest, all in the name of job creation, all that happens is that the rich get richer. Since 1980, the share of income for the top 1% of Americans has more than tripled, while our effective tax rates have gone down by 50%. If it was true that lower taxes for the rich and more wealth for the wealthy led to job creation, today we would be drowning in jobs. And thank you. And yet unemployment and underemployment is at record highs. Another reason that this idea is so wrong-headed is that there can never be enough super rich people to power a great economy. Somebody like me makes hundreds or thousands of times as much as the median American, but I don't buy hundreds or thousands of times as much stuff. My family owns 3 cars, not 3,000. I buy a few pairs of pants and shirts a year like most American men. Occasionally we go out to eat with friends. I can't buy enough of anything to make for the fact that millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans can't buy any new cars, any clothes, or enjoy any meals out. Nor can I make up for the falling consumption of the vast majority of middle-class families that are barely squeaking by, buried by spiraling costs and trapped by stagnant or declining wages. Here's an incredible fact, that if the typical American family still retained the same share of income that they did in 1970, they'd earn like $45,000 more a year. Imagine what our economy would be like if that were the case. Significant privileges have come to people like me, capitalists, for being perceived as job creators at the center of the economic universe, and the language and metaphors we use to defend the current economic and social arrangements is telling. It's a small jump from job creator to the creator. This language obviously wasn't, this language was not chosen by accident. And it's only honest to admit that when somebody like me calls themselves a job creator, we're not just describing how the economy works, but more particularly, we're making a claim on status and privileges that we deserve. Speaking of special privileges, the extraordinary differential between the 15% tax rate that capitalists pay on carried interest, dividends, and capital gains, and the 35% top marginal rate on work that ordinary Americans pay, is kind of hard to justify without a touch of deification. We've had it backwards for the last 30 years. Rich people like me don't create jobs. Jobs are a consequence of an ecosystemic feedback loop between customers and businesses. And when the middle class thrives, businesses grow and hire, and owners profit. That's why taxing the rich to pay for investments that benefit all is such a fantastic deal for the middle class and the rich. So, ladies and gentlemen, here's an idea worth spreading. In a capitalist economy, the true job creators are middle-class consumers. And taxing the rich to make investments that make the middle class grow and thrive is the single shrewdest thing we can do for the middle class, for the poor, and for the rich. Thank you.
And that was Nick Henhauer. Now, I'm going to go to my guest in a moment, who's standing by in Washington, D.C., to talk about the latest on genetically modified organism labeling in Monsanto and Big Ag's effort to stop it. But before we do that, also I believe it's time that we had open and honest debates on the influence of any country upon the United States' domestic and foreign policies. Tonight at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary, which is the most listened to radio program I do, I'm going to be talking with a woman from Norway, an award-winning investigative journalist from Harvard, who lived in Afghanistan for 10 years, just got back, and is going to tell the truth about why we're there, what the consequences were to the soldiers, to the people of Afghanistan. And it'll be a riveting hour. Also, we'll have Jamel on, Dar Jamel, talking about our impact upon the citizens of Iraq. We're not having these discussions. We never seem to concern ourselves with what is the consequence to the environment, to people, to life, when we invade a country and we occupy a country. How would we feel if China occupied a state in the United States? We'd be outraged. Yet we think this is completely normal. It's part of our manifest destiny. So you won't want to miss that at 7 p.m. But that gets me to the whole idea that how is our foreign policy created. We say that we have to do this whole intervention against ISIS. And I ask, why isn't Turkey doing it? Turkey has a huge armed forces. They have all state-of-the-art weaponry because they got them from the United States and were trained by us. Saudi Arabia has probably the largest single most advanced and sophisticated armed forces, except for Israel, in the Middle East. Huge by any definition. Well, right there you have two that dwarf like 1,000 to 1 anything ISIS represents as a threat. Why aren't they fully engaged? They're both Sunni. They both support challenges to what ISIS represents, and yet we know now that ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and other radical fundamentalists were trained in Turkey and Syria and in Saudi Arabia. Why can't we have an open dialogue on it? Why can't we bring forth the people who will tell us the truth? But we don't. And we certainly don't have anyone telling us the truth about the extraordinary impact of Israel's body politic and its needs upon the United States, except for one person that has got a strong background, 20-year CIA veteran, operations chief over there. He headed the Bin Laden Unit, and he's Dr. Michael Shearer. Here's what he has to say. It's only 2 minutes long about Israel owns our Congress, and that should be of concern to all of us.
Joining me now to discuss the rising tensions in the Middle East, former CIA operative, head of the Bin Laden Tracking Unit, Michael Shearer. Michael, both the British and the United States have reportedly made it very clear to Israel they would prefer that there be no military action taken. What are your thoughts?
Well, we're at least in the United States, we're pretty helpless. If the Israelis attack Iran, the power of AIPAC and the lobby here, they own the Congress, will lead to our support for whatever the Israelis do, I think. And in an odd way, Lou, it doesn't matter whether we approve what the Iranians do or what the Israelis do to Iran or not, because in the Muslim world, both Shias and Sunnis will regard an Israeli attack on Iran as being sanctioned and supported by the United States, even if we claim to the contrary. So America's on the verge of another war no one needs, and a war that can't be won by air power alone. And so it's really a gaping hole we're looking into that's very dark place.
Should we be making a distinction, Michael, between war and a strike to destroy nuclear weapons capabilities?
Well, I think there would be a difference if we assumed if we keep punching people that they won't punch back. The Iranians don't have a military capable of conducting themselves on an even basis with the United States. But within the United States, within Canada, within Mexico, within the Caribbean area, the Iranians have an intelligence and terror apparatus that's perfectly capable of exacting revenge for them here at home. Much more than Saddam, much more than Al-Qaeda. And although they won't use it unless they're attacked, I'm afraid they will use it if our arrogant Israeli friends go ahead and attack the Iranians.
Here. Now let's go over and say hello to, from Washington, D.C., Alex Baden-Mayer. She is the Washington-based lawyer and activist serving as the political director of the Organic Consumers Fund. She is the co-editor with the Organic Consumers Organization's director, Ronnie Cummins, of its newsletter, Organic Bites, which reaches about 300,000 subscribers. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Following Monsanto's wins in California and Washington State, the efforts to pass legislation to mandate the labeling of genetically modified foods and products has improved. Now it appears that there might be a substantial win to label GMOs in Oregon and hopefully Colorado. There's also a recent Farmer Coalition effort in New Jersey. A considerable amount of grassroots funding is going into the Oregon vote that will take place in just 2 weeks now, but this is up against the $8.7 million Monsanto has already spent, plus several million more from Kraft, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola. In the first half of this year, Big Food and Monsanto have spent about $27 million to defeat state efforts to label GMOs. And since these companies have to label their products in 64 other countries already, why is there such a huge resistance for them to be labeled in the U.S.? And what are their ultimate goals? What are they trying to hide from the American public?
Well, the first thing is that genetically modified foods are inherently dangerous. They are introducing unknown toxins and allergens into our food supply, and most of them have been engineered to either create an insecticide that grows directly in our food or resist an herbicide so that much more pesticides can be soaked on our food. It's alarming how many herbicides and pesticides and insecticides we're getting in our food because of GMOs. So that's the big battle. They want to sell chemicals. They found a way to do this through genetic engineering, and it's inherently dangerous. The chemicals that GMOs are designed to cooperate with and increase the use of, we know that they cause cancer. We know that they cause Parkinson's disease. We know that they may be linked now to autism. And these are certainly big concerns for the consuming public, but most people don't know. Most people don't know that they're eating genetically modified foods. If they hear about genetic engineering, they think it's being used to feed the world, and they're being kept in the dark. So if we break through with labeling on genetically modified foods, people will finally understand what they're eating, and hopefully that would cause a big shift in what the American public is eating.
Well, there's been a flurry of research and reports coming from the scientific community increasingly showing the dangers and risks of genetically modified crops and big agris pesticides, particularly Monsanto's Roundup, on human and non-human health and the environment. Also, recent reports show that big ag's claims of greater crop yields are mostly bogus and should not be relied upon. And even mainstream news is starting to question Big Ag's claims. Some are reporting that Monsanto, DuPont, Syngenta, and other GMOs like Bayer firms are turning more desperate in light of the successes so far at the state levels. Whole Foods announced it will become completely transparent. That'll be a change regarding GMOs. And some companies, such as General Mills, announced it will no longer use GMOs in its recipes, such as Cheerios, as a means to not have to label. So much is going on now that the average person is not aware of. But what is happening at the national level? Do you believe that the GMO companies will try and end around and say, well, it doesn't matter if the states say it, let's go to the FDA and get the FDA on our side so we'll have a national law that will overreach any of the state laws?
That's definitely their strategy, and it could be done by the FDA. I don't think Barack Obama's FDA would do that, but we don't know who the next president will be. And they are very likely to propose a watered-down labeling strategy that would preempt state action. And so it's very unlikely that we could ever get what we want at the federal level. That's why these state fights are so important, and it's very, very important that we pass as many state laws as possible before the federal government acts. We have an excellent chance of passing laws in the November election in Oregon and Colorado. And your listeners can actually get involved from anywhere they are in the country or the world. They can contact voters through an online program that we have. They can go to OregonRightToKnow.org and click on Action, and they can get set up immediately to make contact with voters in Oregon to encourage them to turn out and vote for the Initiative 92.
Your website is organicconsumers.org. You can reach out to the Organic Consumers Organization. They're doing their best. By the way, Richard Gale and I are going to be writing the newest article on everything that's wrong with GMOs. We're taking all the arguments they're using in Colorado and Oregon right now and showing why they are wrong. And that will be done by tonight. We'll post it tomorrow because we only have 2 weeks and we want the listeners in all these states to have as much information as possible. We'll send you a copy of it, all right?
Fantastic.
All the best to all that you're doing down in Washington on our behalf, Alex.
Oh, thank you. Take care, Jay. Goodbye.
Bye. Alexis Baden-Mayer from the Organic Organization. I'm Gary Nall, and I'm going to do a short talk back now, since we've covered a lot of topics, to see what's interesting to you, what input you have, your questions, your challenges. Call us at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And while you're calling in, we have in studio Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. First, I want to let you know that you got an amazing reaction to the to yesterday's show, where you had Philip Wolin, the piece on Philip Wolin, and your follow-up commentary to it. People were very, very moved by the entire show, and got a lot of feedback on that. But one email I wanted to bring up was, it appears that you were out in public on Sunday, and you were at one of the expos here in Manhattan, and this listener wrote, "You had your sunglasses on today, but they could not hide you. I was at the expo. There were lots of people, and I was watching you very carefully. I noticed that you were reading a lot of labels. So the question is, what did you think of the event, and did you find anything of great significance there?"
A couple of things. First, we want to mention that there's only about 3 weeks before we begin our brain health 3-month support group. To get into the Brain Health Research Support Group, you have to have a letter from your physician showing you've been clinically depressed or have suffering from anxiety, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, memory loss, ALS, something impacting the brain. And then we'll be meeting every week on Sunday, late afternoon, for 2 to 3 hours to help with the latest protocols I've come up with. So give Luann a call if you want to be a part of that, because we will be closing it off in another week. Give me your number, please.
Surely. It's 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. I interview every single person, and I've interviewed dozens and dozens of people.
Good. I'm looking forward to the group, and we're getting great results with the current group on diabetes, weight loss, high blood pressure.
Amazing.
I mean, one woman's already lost 33 pounds, so that's good. I went down there just to see what it was, since it wasn't so much on health as it was on kind of new agey, you know, issues. You know, a lot of the people who are the so-called intuitives. And there is, in our society, there should always be room for the eccentric movements. And not that they work or don't work. It's not for me to judge that. But I did find, sprinkled in between that, some boosts and some people who are doing good work. I was particularly impressed with this Korean tea meditation and the healing arts of how this woman made her teas, knowing a lot about herbs, having written a book on herbs. I was looking at her herbs, how she processed them, and I'm thinking, here's someone who's doing good work and has probably no publicity, only has a few people that actually knows about her work, and so, you know, someone like that, I would certainly want to support. There was a gentleman who also, I think it's called The Forgotten Foods, showing how he prepares his herbs to make his tinctures and reductions. Again, completely legitimate. So you have to be discerning. You have to know what it is you're looking for. But if you're looking for herbs that can make a difference, tonics can make a difference, you'll find some of them there. More importantly was the demonstration up in Harlem that I participated in front of the state building, or where Clinton had, not the state building, but where Clinton has his office, on behalf of the people of Haiti. And there are photographs of that up on my website. If you go to GaryNall.com, go to the Facebook, you'll see the photographs. And why was I there? Because I was there because, A, you would have seen no other journalist there. It's like a topic they won't touch. Why? Because Clinton's associated with it. Take a look at Haiti, and what you're going to find is nearly half the population is in extreme poverty, two-thirds in what is called normal poverty, which would be, in America, dire poverty. And yet, three of every four families in rural areas own their own land, but they're given no support whatsoever. So if you live in the country and you own your own property, you're not helped at all. And since the earthquake caused 250,000 deaths, where's all that money gone? You still have people in debt bondage. And then you take a look. From the 1950s through the 80s, the United States supported the dictatorship of Papa Doc Duvalier and Baby Doc Duvalier that ruined the economy economically and socially. And there's been nothing but invasion and coup to implement the free market economy that Clinton was behind. And just last week in Iowa, Mr. Clinton bragged about his Haitian record. And I would not brag about anything if I were Mr. Clinton concerning Haiti, because there was a time when Haiti actually exported food. They were food complete until he, Clinton, brought in cheap food from America that underpriced the price that a Haitian could sell food, and destroyed it. Now, he's acknowledged that, but that wasn't that's not up on anyone's talking points. And also, the World Health Organization says cholera is easily treatable, and that's true. But why is it there's been an epidemic that's killed over 10,000 Haitians with cholera, 700,000 sickened, and the UN has yet to take responsibility, even though DNA testing has shown that it came from Nepalese UN soldiers who were there, and no one has been given a penny. No cholera hospitals have been built. So I was there to protest on behalf of all that's gone wrong in Haiti that we have been behind, and especially the destruction of the Haitian economy, all to exploit it by the NGOs. And I don't trust any of those NGOs or the billions of dollars, because none of the billions of dollars ever get to the Haitian people. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay.
We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now we got coming in the studio... Utrice finally showed up. Utrice,
I have a splitting headache.
Where you been?
You know, it's an interesting story. They made me sleep.
Utrice has been in Detroit. She just walked back. She's.
Oh gosh. Hello, Luann.
How are you?
How are you going to be around a bit after?
I'm out there.
Okay, so. All right, so. I'd love to talk to you for 2 seconds, please, before you go.
Okay.